It is with great sadness that I share we have not 20 but 50 casualties. In addition to the shooter, there are another 53 that are hospitalized.
My son was in the nightclub with his boyfriend and other friends. His boyfriend has been shot multiple times.
This was an act of terror and an act of hate.
According to law enforcement sources, his name was Omar Mateen.
We know that this individual did purchase at least 2 firearms. He is not a prohibited person, so you can legally walk into a gun dealership and acquire and purchase firearms.
The FBI first became aware of Mateen in 2013 when he made inflammatory comments to coworkers alleging possible terrorist ties.
Somewhere between 2 and 5 a.m., he called 911 to say he was pledging allegiance to ISIS.
As Americans, we are united in grief, in outrage, and in resolve to defend our people.
So in the midst of a beautiful weekend in Chicago, you wake up Sunday morning, you get that. And if you have a soul, your heart breaks. People just went out Saturday night for Latin night at this club in Orlando. And by the time the sun comes up Sunday morning, it is the worst mass shooting in American history and the most killed in an act of terrorism since 9/11. And what do we do now? It's just outrageous. Omar Mateen is just the latest coward, sick, twisted coward with a gun who decided to take out his demons and affect whatever was hurting him on innocent people. Sadly, he's dead. And I don't say sadly he's dead because I wish he was still here. I wish he was still here to answer questions about why he's a coward and what he believed in and who he talked to and were there any connections. Because, frankly, there's no real reason to believe that he was on the phone with ISIS control. ISIS doesn't care if you are a card-carrying member or someone that wants to act out during the month of Ramadan, which they asked terrorists to do in this country. And by the way, there's plenty of them. They're right here in Chicago. They're everywhere. So for the authorities who are already overtaxed to try to find everybody, everybody is dependent on people to talk. Well, people did talk in the case of this guy. A coworker of his at the security firm turned him into his boss several times. And this coworker who worked with him on the line checking people into the courthouse in whatever county they were in, asked for this guy to be removed or asked for him to be transferred to another job. This coworker eventually had to leave because Mateen started harassing him and stalking him. So there were warnings. This coworker who was spoken on the record over the weekend said he believes the boss of the security company didn't do anything because he was afraid of the fact that this was a Muslim person who would cause trouble. Well, he did yesterday. So when we drop the ball on the tightest of circles, those who you know who may be trouble, then these type of things can happen. But we live in a world now where at any given time, your life can be ended. You just it's no different than the Bataclan in Paris, the office workers in San Bernardino, people at this club in Orlando. What's the similarity? They're just Americans living their lives. Oh, and by the way, the shooter's an American citizen. So when you hear Trump and others shoot their mouths off today about watching the borders for Muslims, well, now I guess you got to deport all the Muslims. Because if that's the problem, the religion is the problem, then they all got to go in your world. So there's a million tentacles to this problem and no terrific answers for any of it. We'll get into answers that we think we can direct people to. We'll talk to leaders today. But I got to tell you something, I'm very disappointed in the leadership of the city, the state, and to some extent the federal government, again, because you deserve to hear from all of them. The president stepped up yesterday. Who else have you heard from? I will say this. Senator Durbin's office has promised he will be on as soon as tomorrow or Wednesday. That's the latest update. That's a response that we normally get quickly. Durbin's office and Durbin's people are very good. Senator Kirk also will appear at some point this week. The governor, no real answer. The mayor's office, no real answer. The new police superintendent, no real answer. And with Pride Parade coming up next Sunday, there's people in this town that would like to know what the measure of safety is and if there's an attack against gays and lesbians and people who support them, like you and I and everybody else, who think straight in my world, you know, on Sunday.
A week from Sunday. Yeah. They are going to have. He did release a statement, Mayor Emanuel. Saying,
yeah, but you and I were talking about this off the air.
Yeah.
I know.
I agree.
Step up.
I agree. He said increased police presence, of course. And they've already stepped up police presence in the Wrigleyville area, the Boys Town area. But again, you're right. Got to come out and talk about it.
Yesterday, the Tony Awards were in a very awkward position to have the Tony Awards in a big celebration last night. I thought James Corden, the host of the Late Late Show, did a nice job with the hosting piece overall. But here's what they said to open the show.
All around the world, people are trying to come to terms with the horrific events that took place in Orlando this morning. On behalf of the whole theater community and every person in this room, our hearts go out to all of those affected by this atrocity. All we can say is you are not on your own right now. Your tragedy is our tragedy. Theater is a place where every race, creed, sexuality, and gender is equal, is embraced, and is loved. Hate will never win. Together, we have to make sure of that. Tonight's show stands as a symbol and a celebration of that principle. This is the Tony Awards.
Tom Brokaw was on Fred Chuck Todd's Meet the Press program yesterday. We'll get to Tom Brokaw a little bit later on as well. But again, for the mayor, for the governor, and for the police superintendent, the public needs to hear from you. Where are you? Don't need you on an email. Don't need you on some digital statement. Don't need you on a press release. You need to speak up. You were going to say?
And I was just going to say, this is another example, too. If you see something, say something. Because his wife, you know, she already came forward. But initially, it came to light that she was a victim of domestic violence. He abused her. She sought help. She got help from her family and her parents and her friends and got the courage to leave him. So there were people speaking out about him. And we're going to talk about it throughout the morning, too. The FBI interviewed him twice.
The FBI interviewed him twice and couldn't do anything, the same way they had with the older Sarnaev brother in Boston and others. So those laws have to be changed.
Right.
And here's a guy who had coworkers and an ex-wife earmarking him as a threat.
Right.
Who had been talked to by the FBI twice, who within the last week was able to buy the murder weapons.
Right.
So
legally.
So that whole background check thing ain't working out so well.
And did you know that I saw this on ABC News last night, that even if you are on the terror watch list, you can still buy a gun legally.
Yeah, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And yes, there is a gun issue here, and yes, we will talk about it. It's 6:22 in the morning. Part of the problem with people who are dangerous in life are the laws. We're going to break this up into pieces for, you know, the sake of the discussion this morning and this week as well, because in the interest of timing on this show, that's the best way to tackle this. The ex-wife, as Andrea pointed out earlier, and a coworker indicated that the murderer of Orlando was mentally ill, was, you know, a dangerous, a crazy person. And there were authorities that were involved in a domestic violence case. As I said, the boss of the security company was alerted to it. But there's only so much law enforcement can do, because until you commit the crime or make a specific threat to commit a crime that rises to the level of breaking the law, there's not much that the authorities can do other than watch you. And if this guy went silent and snapped, as we believe he did in the past week, it makes it even more difficult. Now, we may find out in the investigation that he was talking to somebody. We may find out that somebody knew, but because there's almost always in these cases, there's somebody go, well, I knew there was trouble, but I never thought they'd do this. We have to get beyond the I never thought they'd do this and be vigilant in making sure authorities know you got a problem on your hands. But in the same way that Adam Lanza killed all the kids in Newtown, there's a guy or there's a kid who grows up with a mother who knows she has a disturbed son, who inexplicably decided gun therapy mm-hmm. was a good idea and would right. take him to the shooting range. And even after things got dark and he refused to talk to her, family dysfunction being what it was, well, she never thought that he'd get up one morning, murder her, and then murder children.
Right. 20 children.
So that circle that you're in, you got to trust your inner voice. And that circle that you're in, all you can do is take it to the authorities and say, what are you doing? You know, this person is a danger. This person is a threat. But the authorities can only act within their scope of capabilities. And one of the things that's come up in regards to what happened in Orlando is, and we'll take this up with an FBI hostage expert next hour, a guy named Danny Coulson, who's been on the show before. Why did they wait 3 hours? And when they went in after 3 hours, what was the decision point to go in? And what caused the majority of the death? Was it at that point? What do we know? So there's lots of pieces of this that need to be attacked, including how it was handled from the point of the local Orlando police as well.
You're right. And it is going to become a gun issue at some point, too. But I am just baffled at the fact that somebody who was questioned twice by the FBI was allowed to buy an assault weapon.
Right.
Not a gun, not a hunting rifle, not a, you know, a gun to go practice target practice with, you know, at a legal facility. An assault weapon that fires 30 bullets with one time.
Yeah, we'll take up the gun piece a little later, but that's going to be the key issue. These high-capacity clips that have been outlawed in many places. The assault weapons ban that President Clinton put into effect back in 94 expired in 2004. The gutless members of Congress haven't been able to figure out a way to keep it going. So we'll go down the gun road later. But the mental health road, look at the state of Illinois, where mental health wellness programs have been canceled left and right. Well, it's not a lot different in most of the country. Mental health is still something that authorities and government doesn't talk about, that insurance companies are still somewhat hesitant to pay for, that school districts don't have the resources to handle and handle appropriately. And if someone's mentally ill and eventually gets their hands on a gun, really, really bad things can happen. So, you know, I've always been of the mind that, well, it's a needle in a haystack. It's a very small chance it's ever going to happen to you or anybody you love. Well, you want to roll the dice on that anymore? This is happening. If the mass killings in this country are defined as three or more at a time, these are happening every day somewhere right in America. I'm not exaggerating. Every day somewhere in America, three or more people are killed with guns by some nut with an agenda.
And if I can add on to that, too, they're happening at places, nightclubs, movie theaters, outside of the Starbucks, in a much lesser capacity, of course, here in Chicago, with that instance. But they're happening in places where you go, you think it's a safe haven.
Like a nightclub on a Saturday night.
Yeah, you go to a nightclub, a popular nightclub that's packed on a Saturday night.
In Orlando. And by the way, there was a secondary gun incident in Orlando this morning, which is awful. And we would have been talking about this morning if not for the scope of the nightclub tragedy. But a former contestant on The Voice was signing autographs after a show in Orlando on Friday night, and a fan walked up, asked for a hug. She stood up to hug him. He pulled out a gun and murdered her. She's 20, 21 years old.
That's a horrendous story, too.
So both of those in Orlando. Tom Brokaw was on Meet the Press yesterday, and he talked about the lack of conversation that goes on in government about this, really the lack of dialogue about fixing any of this and how numb we've all gotten to it.
I'm a gun owner. I've been saying this for months now. It's time for people to come together and say, enough. If he had an assault weapon, if it was an AR-14, Sam McChrystal has said not to be in civilian hands. It's designed to do one thing, to kill people. We don't have any dialogue going on in America about all of these mass shootings that have occurred since San Bernardino. And they've been going on around the country, three or more killed at a time. This absolutely belongs in the political debate, and it ought to be a place where both parties can talk about it in a rational fashion to dial down. You got a problem? Get a gun. That's what goes on now. It's got to come to an end. It's a terrible commentary.
And what do we hear instead? We hear about the judge in Indiana or the emails or the Wall Street speeches. It's just outrageous. It's 6:28. We're back with the big story coming up. Dr. Most joins us this morning, as always. I asked Dr. Most to shift gears a little bit today. And because we got to just grow up and face the reality of things, what do you do in an emergency situation before the EMTs show up? How do you save lives? How do you react? How do you react at a car accident? How do you react when you're the first person on the scene? We'll talk to Dr. Most about that coming up. 6:28, this is 720 WGN.
This could have been any one of our communities. So I told Mayor Dyer that whatever help he and the people of Orlando need, they are going to get it. As a country, we will be there for the people of Orlando today, tomorrow and for all the days to come.
641, Dr. Kevin Most, courtesy of Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. You know, tough times, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
So you and I were talking yesterday a bit. I thought it'd be important, and I don't think we've ever discussed this. You know, wherever you are in life as a grown-up, you can come across an emergency situation at any time. It doesn't mean you're going to be in the middle of a shooting. But I thought it'd be good for you to give us a bit of an education on, you know, how to handle ourselves and how not to make the situation worse before the EMTs show up. Yeah. You know, to help because we need people to step up at times like that. So whether it's a car accident or whatever the case may be. But before we get to that, there were a couple things that came up yesterday I'd just be curious to ask you about. One is the blood donations. Obviously, because this was a nightclub that was frequented by gays and lesbians, there's a huge outpouring of that community to donate blood, and many of them were turned away. I thought a lot of those laws had been changed, but is that a Florida thing or a national thing?
Well, I think people were turned away, actually, because the lines were so long, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't think that they were being turned away for health-related reasons.
Well, there was a law in the books about gay men donating blood that seemed to be an issue. So, you know, if you find out something about it later, maybe let us know. But I thought that was part of it.
Yeah, if they shared some health-related issues that they may have, whether it's hepatitis or they're positive for HIV, you know, those would be ones that they would say, you know, we can't accept your blood. However, you know, if I'm not mistaken, it was a tremendous outpouring of individuals getting in line to donate blood as well.
Yeah, no, the community stepped up big. It just seemed unfortunate that a lot were turned away. So just whatever you find out, let us know.
Yeah.
And then there's the HIPAA code. The HIPAA code is what?
Well, it's essentially the privacy code that the federal government has written as far as who I can share your information with. So I can't share any of your health information without your written release. However, Obama in January made a slight change that says, hold on, time out. Why wouldn't we, if a psychologist or psychiatrist or any mental health individual knows that an individual should not be carrying a gun, why shouldn't he be able to share that with the FBI's background check system?
Yeah.
So he has allowed that without giving a diagnosis, without giving any other medical information, but he still knows that this individual would not be safe owning a gun.
Well, the other thing that came up too, and obviously your point is vitally important, but the other thing that came up too is parents trying to find out if their kid was okay. And because there was a medical situation with their kid, doctors weren't able to give information to these parents. Does that sound right to you?
No, remember, these kids are not kids. They're adults now.
Well, but, you know, kid's the generic term. I mean, you're always a kid to your parent.
Yep. So the release of that information is also very difficult. You know, if you called here and said, is so-and-so in the hospital, we can't tell you that. So we really do have to protect that individual's privacy and their medical records. If someone says, you know, connect me to, you know, Joe Smith in room 321, we will do that if they know they were here. But if they were to call here and say, is so-and-so in your emergency room, we're a little bit more hesitant on giving that information out. Because, again, when you're on the telephone, I can't tell who you are.
Right, and it's done for the right reasons. But in a case like that where you've got a devastated, frantic parent trying to find out where their 25-year-old is, what do they do?
Yeah, so for a lot of those, we will have centers. As a matter of fact, for any of these mass casualties, we will have centers where we will, especially when it's a minor, we will have individuals there that are going to match up the parent with the child. Another problem that they're having in Florida right now is they can't even identify these individuals. So they don't want to give out bad information or terrible information without really knowing exactly what's going on.
They also, this was odd to me, and not necessarily related to the medical side, Doc, maybe it is a little bit, but they've posted the names of the victims to a public website. I don't understand the point of it, because obviously you wouldn't do that until next of kin was notified, and then people who know that individual around the country might be finding out online. It just seems odd.
Yeah, and I'm sure all the next of kin have been notified for anyone that they posted. And it is. It's that fine line of how much information, what information, and when is it released. That's probably one of the bigger things.
All right, let's do traffic. We'll come back. And then everybody, Andrea and Dave and anybody else, you've ever had a question about what do you do in an emergency situation to help somebody survive until EMTs get there. And again, not make it worse, because one of the things I brought up to Doc was, how do you know to move somebody? Because one of the things you saw in the footage yesterday were bodies being moved and dragged quickly and stuff. And you think, well, if there's a spinal injury or a neck injury. But then if there's active gunfire, you want to get away from there as quickly as possible. So it's a bad, bad, bad situation. We want to give people some insight on how maybe they can handle themselves if they find themselves in a situation where they can't help. It's 6:45. Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Impact every day. All right, Doc. So the question is, in cases of emergencies, when trauma help is on the way but not there yet, what do we do? What do we do to make it better, not worse?
Yeah, I think the biggest point you just made in that first sentence is help is on the way. So the most important thing anyone can do in that situation is call 911, be as calm as possible, and try to identify the exact location where you're at.
This is good. So starting there, with 911, what do we say to 911 to help? No matter what state of panic we're in when you call 911, what do you need to tell them other than the location?
The location is how big the event is. So if you say, boy, it's a car accident, I need someone here, and we're at the corner of this and this. Well, that's one message to the to the 911 operator. But if you say there are six cars involved, they're going to send more than one ambulance. They're going to send a bigger response. So we don't expect individuals to say how much they need, but if you can paint a picture so at least the 911 operator can get things in motion, we'd rather have too many assets at the scene than not enough, especially initially.
And you've got to maintain your composure to some extent on 911 so you can actually hear what they're saying and answer their questions, right?
Absolutely, because they will walk you through. If you don't know what to do for some things, they will walk you through. We all want to take CPR. We all want to make sure that we know how to do that, and that is great. But we also want to make sure that we do things the right way. I'll give you a perfect example. If I asked you to take your pulse right now, where would you go to feel it?
Left wrist.
Okay. So a lot of people are going to go into their right wrist, and they go to put your palm up, go to the base of your thumb, right where your wrist is, and you should be able to feel what we call the radial artery. Mm-hmm. Other people always see people go to their neck to do that. But in the neck, unfortunately, we have an artery called the carotid artery, and if people don't know exactly where to look, they're in there and they're massaging, essentially. They're pushing their fingers around looking for it. Well, massaging the cardiac artery slows down the heart rate.
Is that right? I never knew that.
So we don't want people manipulating in the neck to push around looking for an artery when, in fact, they should be looking at the wrist.
Yeah, so there you go. Make it better, not worse.
Correct. Also, one of the bigger chances of stroke is massaging that cardiac artery because we have plaque there and it can free that up. So everyone should just try it right now and just find out, oh, okay, that's where I go to feel my pulse in the radial artery.
Doc, you mentioned CPR. How do you know when to perform CPR on someone? Say, God forbid, you're in a situation like this. And what if you don't know how to perform CPR? Is there something you can do kind of in the interim, chest compressions or anything like that?
Yeah, we'd much rather people actually took the course of CPR so that they do it. The 911 operator can walk you through, but you really want to make sure that the person needs CPR before you start doing CPR on them, obviously. And sometimes in that situation, there is a lot of adrenaline, a lot of emotion. But, you really want to see, is the person breathing? You want to make sure that their tongue is not in their way, blocking their airway. So some simple things, because often it's the breaths that they need more than they do the heart rate, because the heart's often going by the time they stop breathing. But also just going to the community center and taking a simple course in CPR is great. And really, the biggest thing with the heart right now is AEDs. So almost everywhere that you go, you're going to see AEDs. Now, these are so simple to use. If I'm not mistaken,
these are the defibs, right?
Correct. Automatic electronic defibrillator. You don't have to do anything except put the stickers in the right place, and it's very, very easy to do. You don't have to shock people. The machine will shock for you. But really, if you know where it is, that's great.
Dave had a question about this.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Doc, and how do you know when, if there is a defibrillator there, how do you know it's the right time to use that as opposed to chest compression or the more commonly known CPR?
Correct. The first thing I would tell people to do is get the AED and put it on, because it's going to tell you whether there's a heart rate right there.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And that's to get the heart back in rhythm, right?
Correct. Correct. It'll shock it back into rhythm. Yep, absolutely.
So the most modern machines, they'll tell you whether or not you should go forward once you put the put the paddles on?
Yep, it's going to say checking, and then it is going to say shocking, stand back, shocking, and then it'll shock.
Yep.
And, I'm telling you, they're everywhere. Most golf courses have them, pools, health clubs, everyone has them out. Matter of fact, a lot of police cars have them right now. So when they get on the scene, if they beat the EMS, they're going to put those on as well.
You know, and I know this is a morbid question, but, I mean, it's the world we're in today. If you are in a situation where somebody is bleeding, you know, either in the arm or the chest or wherever, obviously, well, I don't know. I mean, is it just you try and stop that or compress that or make a tourniquet?
Yep. The most important thing you probably do is take off a piece of your clothing or a piece of their clothing, put it up against where that blood is coming from, and just hold tight pressure. Using a tourniquet, if you've been trained in how to use a tourniquet and position the tourniquet, it's okay. But to be honest with you, just holding pressure is going to really be a great thing to do until the paramedics can actually get there.
So you would tie a loose knot, for lack of a better word, and just hold enough pressure to stop the bleeding from being so obvious?
Yeah, you can just take a shirt, fold it up, and push right up against whether it's in the leg or in the arm or wherever it is, and just push up and hold that. Because really all you're trying to do is slow down that broken, open blood vessel, and you do that by compressing the two ends of it.
What about moving a body, whether someone's conscious or unconscious? You know, there's a concern about whether or not there's an injury to the back or the neck and, you know, really doing some damage to somebody. If shots are being fired, obviously it's a different scenario. But in the case of, again, a car accident or other trauma, how do you know if you can move a body?
Yeah, the most important thing is probably to leave the movement of any individual, especially in car accidents, up to the paramedics. Unless there's imminent danger, the car's on fire and you need to get that person out. But besides that, you want to be extremely careful there. If you've ever been on the scene when this happens, you'll see that one of the first things the paramedics do is they're going to put the person in a neck brace so that they can safely at least move their neck. And then they're going to get them very carefully onto what we call a backboard, which is a very hard, it's just a board. And what that's going to do, and then often what they'll do is sandbag the head or strap down the individual. As long as the person's awake in that, they are now protecting that spinal cord, which is the biggest injury that we're concerned about in most blunt trauma.
All right, so we've hit some basics. Is there anything we're missing that you can think of?
No, you know, I think everyone needs to realize that, you know, the state, the Illinois Department of Public Health does a great job. Are we all prepared? We're going to find out this week, actually. We have a two-day drill that starts tomorrow. We don't know what the drill is, but it's going to be multi-counties, and we will stress the system this week to see, it might be a mass shooting, who knows, to see, are we prepared? It's going to show us our blind spots. But I think that you respect the paramedics. When they get there, let them take over. Don't be the guy that says, oh, wait, you know, I'm going to be in here. If they ask for your help, great. But if not, step back. These guys are trained individuals, and they have a much better chance of saving that individual's life than you do.
Good information, Doc, on a tough day and a tough subject. But I think it's all important for people to absorb that. And I know you always pound these things out into writing. So whatever you do that, we'll post that as well.
You got it.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
We'll talk to you soon.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. I didn't know that about the defibs.
No, and I didn't know that about the CPR either. So it's good that we know this.
Do you know where, if we needed a defibrillator right now, where there's one here?
I think there's one in the cafeteria area down the way.
Right, I think there
but
is.
But this is a big building. You
know? Yeah, right.
You'd expect one to be in a lobby in other places. Now, maybe security has one. I don't know.
Yeah. Probably a good thing for all of us to know.
Would be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, to take a crash course in it. Yeah, absolutely.
We really don't have time to search during the show. Last time we had time to search was when there was a flood, and then we needed more of a boat than a defibrillator.
Yes, that's right.
It's 6:58. We'll come back with the news. And then next hour, Danny Colson, who was a pioneer in hostage extrication with the FBI and has saved a lot of lives and chased a lot of bad guys through his career, will be on. And J. Todd Scott, former DEA special agent. Matter of fact, I think he's still with DEA. He's got a book out, and I decided to keep the interview because I also want to talk to him about the investigation part of this and whether or not there's a drugs component to the ISIS piece of this as well. We know there is with the Taliban. Is ISIS making any money off the drug trade? It's a minute before 7. Back after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
7:11 in the morning, and Danny Coulson coming up from the FBI later in the hour. J. Todd Scott, 20 years of the DEA, is now a published author and doing quite well, thank you. And I wanted to keep the previously scheduled interview for the book because I also wanted to tap into his knowledge of what's happening in Orlando as well. And good morning, Todd. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. I'll certainly get to the far empty J. Todd Scott's book here in just a second, but I know you understand that we want to ask you a couple other questions. From a DEA sure. basis, do we know if ISIS is making any money off the drug trade the way the Taliban does in Afghanistan?
Well, I don't know that I could speak specifically about ISIS, but it's clear that there are terrorism ties to the narcotics trade overseas. I mean that's clear. That's something that we've seen before. It's a funding mechanism. Again, I don't want to speak specifically about ISIS or a group, but you know that is a connection that's been established and that you know intel's proven out over time.
Right, because the ISIS folks, like everybody else, has to fund their operation, and drugs usually are a ready source to do that for most bad guys.
Yes, that's true. That is very true.
So when you look at what's gone on in Orlando over the past 24 hours, just in general terms, because this is not your jurisdiction or your beat, but from your 20 years, what do the investigators have to do? There's a million things they need to peel back on the onion, right?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of investigation is, you know, highly complex, just like the cartel investigations that you know, I've done throughout my career. And, you know, it's an absolute tragedy any way that you look at it, what happened out there. And you've got, you know, a lot of very talented people who are going to be spending a lot of time over the next days, weeks, and months trying to follow that trail to, you know, to how that individual ended up in that nightclub.
Todd, who is put on a watch list? Is it, you know, would like El Chapo be on there? Is it just, you know, people who have been a previous threat, who have been reported? How does one end up on the watch list?
You know, from a terrorism standpoint, and again, that's not really my specialty, although it's something that you know, covers all of law enforcement. It's going to be people who, from a variety of intel sources, has, you know, quote-unquote, come up on the radar. And you know, the mechanisms of a watch list are something I can't really speak to. But again, that's somebody who, you know, be it sources or other intel, has been perceived or recognized as, you know, a person of interest or a possible threat, and then steps are taken to you know, kind of focus on that individual's activities and their associations going forward.
As a cop for 20 years plus, I would assume one of the worst things you deal with is incredible access to guns. And it's just as an opinion from you, when you hear somebody like Mateen, after the problems that he had, was still able to buy two guns legally in the past week, it's got to make your head explode.
Yeah, and here, you know, I'm out west in the border, and obviously there's been a history of gun problems here on the border, the movement and trafficking of guns back and forth over the border. You know, as an officer or an agent, you know, you clearly don't want to encounter guns on the street, but you do. And as an officer or an agent, you clearly don't want to have to use your gun on the street, but sometimes that you do. So it's a complex problem, really, from both sides.
Do you feel, the agents feel when you guys talk, do you feel like you're getting political backup, or are you just as frustrated with Congress as the rest of us?
You know, I think that the agents that I work with, the cops that I work with, feel that by and large we get the support that we need, you know, both from the communities that we work in and you know, our legislators who are out there on our behalf.
You're much more level-headed than I am, Todd.
Well, I said I've been around a long time. Uh-huh. So, you know, you kind of see these issues rise and fall, you know, kind of like the tide at times.
Sure.
So you learn to have kind of a level-headed opinion about it.
J. Todd Scott is the guest. The Far Empty is the book where he takes his 20 years with law enforcement and the DEA, his experience, and writes a very compelling book that we're recommending you pick up for your summer reading list, if you will. With all this talk of the border, everything related to the drug trade seems to revolve around the border. So what can you tell us about the book without giving it away?
Well, you know, my book, it's you know, it's kind of talked about, pitched a little bit as a modern Western, and it's clearly set in a rather unique area of West Texas that crosses both sides of the border. And, you know, you can't write about that region without, at times, really about talking about drug issues. And that's what I did. The book isn't specifically about my career or about DEA. You know, it's about kind of a corrupt sheriff, his missing wife, and their 17-year-old son. That's where it starts, but then it kind of grows from there to involve a lot of people in my small fictional town. And clearly drug corruption is one part of that.
When you write a book like this, do any of the characters from your past reach out and go, hey, is that me?
Yeah, I've had that question quite a bit. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough in my long career. I've worked with a lot of state and local cops, a lot of sheriffs. And fortunately, none of them have been like, you know, Stanford Ross, my sheriff. But, you know, cops are great storytellers. And, you know, if that's one thing I've learned over my long career, you know, you spend a lot of time on surveillance, you're sitting in a car, you're staring at houses. You know, there's the job is always interesting, but it's not always exciting. And there are, you know, lots of downtime. And, you know, you fill that time telling stories. And, you know, that a lot of that, I think, appears in the book.
It's called The Far Empty. J. Todd Scott, get two copies. You know you. You're careless. You lose one. Download a third, maybe. Before we let you go, I do want to reinforce the idea of see something, say something with people, because people get frustrated and they go, hold on a second. We said something about this guy, and he still did it. But without the public's information, I would assume you guys would be lost.
Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, we have people throughout, I've had people throughout my career who, you know, they don't know what they know, but they were smart enough to come and say something about it. And all of that is necessary to do the sort of investigations that I've been involved in. And, you know, that information is critical.
Appreciate your time and good luck with the book. And I hope we talk again.
Thank you so much.
There you go. J. Todd Scott, DEA agent for 20 years. The Far Empty is the book. It's 720. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about what appears to be the obvious issue here of something we could do immediately if we choose to. Comes down to, the president got this right yesterday when he said, what kind of a country do you want to live in? In a moment, 720. This is 720 WGN.
Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school or in a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be.
/7:25, Senator Durbin called for immediate action by Congress yesterday, and we'll be on the show to talk about it potentially tomorrow. We're trying to get everybody's schedules together. And Governor Rauner, we're still waiting to hear from you. Mayor Emanuel, we're still waiting to hear from you. Superintendent Eddie Johnson, we're still waiting to hear from you about implications in Chicago with the Pride Parade coming up. Here's what we know. We know there's three phases to the problem of terrorism. One is the long-form answer, and the long-form answer is to convince kids who are growing up on that part of the world that we're not the enemy. And that's a cultural change. And also, concurrently, to wipe out the Islamic State and the terrorism that goes with it. That's the long answer. That's not going to happen overnight. The medium-term answer, and this takes a long time, too, is to get mental health care on a proper footing in this country, or even back to level where it was before budgets were being cut, not just in Illinois, but in troubled state governments around the country. Because if you don't take care of mental health, and you got somebody with mental health issues down the road, and they have access to a gun, you have nothing but problem. But nothing but problems. But the short-term answer is this. Here's what we know. And as a Second Amendment supporter, I'm reaching out to everybody who is a Second Amendment supporter to understand something. If you are truly afraid that the Second Amendment's under attack, keep doing nothing. Because the longer you keep doing nothing, the more you're going to fire up those who would literally like to shut down the Second Amendment. And they're not going to be able to take your guns away. So take that off the table. That's just fear-mongering nonsense, because that's a constitutional amendment and an action of the Supreme Court. That's not going to happen. But there could be, in quotes, draconian gun laws like you've never seen before. So why not a little common sense? Here's what we know. We know in San Bernardino. We know at Newtown. We know yesterday in Orlando that all of these mass killings, almost every single one of them, have one similarity. And that's an AR-15 style rifle was used in the killings with a high capacity clip. Now, we don't have confirmation yet that a high capacity clip was used yesterday, but video from there that's been analyzed pretty quickly by news organizations said you can hear 10 shots, you can hear 20 shots, you can hear a rapid fire number of shots that would be an indicator of a high capacity clip. The president tried to limit clip size previously, certainly after Newtown. When the assault weapons ban ended in 2004 and wasn't able to be reestablished, we've been living in this netherworld of what Brokaw talked about on Meet the Press yesterday. We played that clip earlier where you got a problem, get a gun. The problem in getting a gun is if you're a terrorist or you're a crazy person is you can kill a lot of people in very short order if you have an AR-15 style rifle. So look at it this way. People die in this country every day from car accidents, right?
Yes, they do.
If all the car accidents involved a red car, we would be screaming for investigations of red cars. And in the meantime, we would say no more red cars until we figure out what's going on. So how about some common sense? Does it suck that as a legal AR-15 owner, because you can argue all day, do you have to have an AR-15? Do you not? Listen, I don't even care about that argument. That argument, that ship has sailed. But what are you going to do to fix the problem? And what are you going to do to understand that there is a problem? And even though you're a legal gun owner, you shouldn't have to jump through extra hoops. It's not you, it's other people. You need to step up and help solve the problem. And if that means you're going to have to deal with a smaller clip, if that means that you're not going to be able to get the ammo in the capacities that you had before, well, you're going to have to deal with it.
Right.
You know, I'm not getting into an argument about whether or not it's a sport rifle. I'm not getting into an argument about whether or not you should own one. There are millions of these already in people's hands. Those aren't coming back. And yeah, in all likelihood, the next mass killing could involve a different weapon. But when we keep seeing the AR-15 style rifle used over and over and over and over and over again, anybody noticing a pattern? Shut it down.
Meaning stop making them?
Stop selling them immediately. Stop selling AR-15 style rifles immediately. Immediately. And I don't want to hear arguments from people going, bad guys get guns. Bad guys will do something else. They'll just shoot people up with handguns. Right. This is about limiting the damage once the shooting starts. And there's only one way to do it. Because you know we don't have the laws on the books or the enforcement capabilities of the laws on the books to keep these guns out of bad guys' hands. You've mentioned it all morning. This guy had run-ins with the law over and over again and two FBI checks and he could still buy a gun. I'm looking at a quote right here. The Homeland Security Undersecretary John Cohen: being on a terror watch list is not itself disqualifying under law. As a matter of fact, the disqualifying elements of the investigation might be classified. In other words, you can have a classified file about bad stuff you've done that the terror watch list people wouldn't have access to. Wouldn't the terror watch list supersede all of that? Wouldn't you think they'd get all the information?
You would think.
And if people want to scream about civil rights, look, if you're incorrectly on a terror watch list, then you got to fix it. Because if you shouldn't be on there, there's a million legal ways to fix it. Again, I'm sorry that legal gun owners have to deal with extra hassle, but you got to stop selling these high-capacity magazines immediately, and you got to shut those down, and you got to stop selling this gun immediately, and you got to shut them down. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen again, because it will, but maybe the next time it happens, the nut has a handgun, and instead of 50 people dying, we get in and stop him.
Mm-hmm. Or it could have been tackled or something. Yep.
It's just common sense. It's just common sense. It's not going to fix the problem. It's going to address the problem. And frankly, we haven't done any of that to this point. 7:31, back in a minute on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The FBI first became aware of Martine in 2013 when he made inflammatory comments to coworkers alleging possible terrorist ties. The FBI thoroughly investigated the matter, including interviews of witnesses, physical surveillance, and records checks. In the course of the investigation, Mateen was interviewed twice. Ultimately, we were unable to verify the substance of his comments, and the investigation was closed.
7:42, another sick, twisted coward walks into a building and kills more people than have died in any terrorist act in this country since 9/11. And of the 53 injured, many of them still clinging to life as well. Danny Colson knows more about this than we'll ever know, because for years and years, it's 30 years at the FBI, he was one of the leaders of the organization and commanded the FBI's hostage rescue team. As a matter of fact, he invented it, created it. He was at Oklahoma City. Credits far too deep to mention, and for the last several years have been running a private security firm, Colson Jackson Associates, and co-authored Heroes Inside the FBI's Secret Counterterror Force. He's a good guy and a friend of the program, and it's nice to have him on again. Danny, I know we never talk during times that are good, but I hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm very well, very sad about what happened yesterday, and concerned that the first of many. I think that we've seen the start of a new jihad movement in our country, and I think it's kind of frightening.
Do we have any idea, or do we even know how to quantify how many of these types even are in our midst?
Well, the director says over 900, and I think that's probably an understatement. When you consider we're going to start bringing in Syrian, quote, refugees, which I think are more like invaders, I think it's beyond comprehension. And we expect local law enforcement and the FBI and the other agencies to keep track of these people. It's not going to happen. So I'm concerned that more and more of these people are coming in as a fifth column that will actually engage in a war against us. And we are at war, by the way. Our government doesn't admit it. But when somebody says you're at war, they're making war on you. I think you're at war. So I think there's a lot of issues here that are on the table. And hopefully down the road we'll have some president. I have a president that will address these problems.
Well, but when you have a combination of politics and that agenda versus actually chasing the bad guys and putting your life on the line, those two things shouldn't be competing agendas, but they are. And I'm not in the business of second-guessing cops ever, but and you know more about this than anybody I could find today, with the waiting for the 2 or 3 hours that the local police force did in a hostage situation, can you explain to folks why that may have been necessary or why that may have been the right call? And again, it's generalities because I know you weren't involved in it.
Well, it's hard to say. I think I can give you a couple of scenarios. It may be that there was a lull in the situation where all the shooting had stopped and that they thought they had some chance to talk this guy out. Also, it could have been capabilities. They may not have had the capability to get in there inside. The most important thing about a hostage rescue is you got to get in. And if you can't get in, you're kind of stymied. I don't know if that happened here. I know that, for instance, the Fort Worth Police Department has a ram on their armored car. I saw it just last week. I worked with them, and they can roll in there really fast and use that ram to take out a wall. I don't know the answer to it. The normal procedure is you go in immediately, and I know he was engaged very early in the conflict by at least one or maybe two officers, and I don't know what happened there. So a lot of questions are going to be asked about this, and I don't want to criticize these guys at all. They save a lot of lives.
You bet.
I've worked with the Orlando Police Department. They're outstanding departments. So their circumstances. Also remember, sometimes police aren't masters of their own destiny either. You got politicians above them. So there are a lot of questions to be asked here. And I think the Orlando PD is one of the best I've ever worked with. And we want to be careful about criticizing them. When there's a lot of criticism to go around with regard to terrorism in general, I think we should focus on that, not what the police did or didn't do.
No, I understand that. But I also think it's important for the public to have a sense of what professionals think and may go through at times like that, because that can limit the criticism. Is there any general way to describe how you know it's go time?
It's go time when the shots start.
So exactly. So the shots must have started up again at 5 a.m. That would have been indicative of that?
I can't say that for sure. It may have been that they had their resources there. It could be that now we have the capability to get in, which we didn't have earlier.
I don't know.
I'm not trying to be evasive at all.
I get it.
It's based on facts. And so I've had to rescue hostages. And I'll tell you, it's not easy. And it's a very difficult situation. And you also risk the lives of the rescuers, too. So, they got a bunch out, and we'll see what happened. I think in the end, we'll probably come out, they did exactly the right thing. But it's just a bad situation. It's, when you have a problem like that, with that kind of carnage, nothing goes right. It's not like the movies where, you know, somebody runs in and saves the day and shoots the gun out of the hand of the bad guy. It's just, it's carnage and it's war. It's an act of war perpetrated upon us, and we won't even admit that. So I think we have to consider that, you know, the fog of war, and that's what we're dealing with here.
Danny, I know this is maybe a morbid question, but it's the world we live in, unfortunately, today. What would you tell people to do if they're in a situation like that and they hear gunshots? I mean, do you try to be the hero? Oh, do you run to hide?
No.
Do you try to get out?
Okay. Thank you for that question. That's the most important thing we're going to talk about today. The first thing, and we teach this in our company, the first thing is to believe it. If you're in a movie theater or you're in a supermarket, you hear firecrackers, that's not firecrackers. That's gunshots, and you need to get the heck out of there. You need to run for the door, run for the exit, get away, get space between you and the sound, and keep going. If you can't do that, if there's a place you can effectively lock yourself in with a lock on the door and you can barricade, you have about a 99% chance of living through that if you can get yourself barricaded. The whole key to it is putting space between you and the shooter. And if you do that, you have a real good chance of surviving. Here, these people were trapped in there. And another thing to remember, the average distance of a lethal active shooter shot is only 8 inches. They're trying to get you cornered, get you in a place you can't get away, and execute you up close and personal. And the only exception to that was the Aurora, Colorado shooting where he shot at long distance. But that's the thing. Believe it. First of all, believe it's happening. If it's not happening, you can come back and finish dinner. But if you're in question, think it's happening. Believe what's going on and get space between you and the sound. Get out of there.
So run, hide, fight in that order?
Yes, sir. Exactly. That's perfect. On your homework.
And, well, you know, Danny, you and I have known each other for a long time. You know, Danny, you put Danny on the air. You better have done your homework.
thank you.
But here's the other piece of this, which, you know, makes my head explode. This guy was not on a watch list or was on a watch list, but still was able to get guns. How do we fix the background check system so it actually catches these guys? And we're not talking about this.
Well, I think that first of all, one area that needs to be looked at is people who have mental illness. And
right.
There are all kinds of laws on the books with regard to how can you disseminate medical information. And the answer is you cannot. So right now, the way the laws are set up in our country, you cannot tell anybody that a person has a medical condition, especially a mental one. So Congress needs to look at this whole thing. They beat their breasts, and I saw a senator stand up, you know, giving a press conference talking about all this nonsense. Well, go back to work. Look at the guidelines for the FBI. Look at how we conduct investigations. Look at how we keep people from buying guns that shouldn't get them. And if they're mentally ill, then they should be on a list that says they are mentally ill and you can't get a gun. So it gets back to legislation. A lot of these privacy bills that were passed back, you know, what, 20 years ago now, are coming back to haunt us because we can't disseminate information we needed to share. This guy should not have been allowed to have a gun. I question why he had a security license. That's another thing, too, which gives him access to a lot of things. And we're looking at right now, see if he ever secured any location that we have. So you raised a lot of good questions. I have not given you a lot of good answers.
No, that's not true, because we're trying to get a general idea of what happens here. And the last question, and I don't know if the law has changed since you've been out, but it appears with the Sarnaev older brother in Boston and with this guy and so many other cases we've seen, that even though the FBI has been able to sit down with these guys, they haven't been able to hold them or take them in. Is that because nothing was actionable, or is there some time frame that you have to do it within?
Both. The guidelines of the Attorney General guide those investigations, and they're not limited just to guidelines, but things you can do. And I can't go into those because they are classified. But the type of investigation you conduct is extremely limited. You can't do electronic surveillance. You can't do surreptitious search warrants. You can't do any of those things until you get to a certain threshold. And that threshold was not reached in the Boston case or in this one. And another thing that's even more sinister is that if the FBI opens a case on a preliminary investigation and then closes it, they're not even allowed to tell the police department they opened it. which is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Maybe the cops can follow. It's just silly. It's political correctness. And the greatest asset to Islamic extremism is political correctness. That and immigration. If we don't address both those, then we could lose this war. France is losing their war. Belgium's losing theirs. Germany's about to lose theirs. So, if we don't want to be like them, we need to change what we're doing.
Yeah. What do we find out? And what have we learned in 15 years? Because we found out in the first week or two after 9/11 that we talked to Michael Hayden about this. He used to run the FBI or the CIA, that the FBI and the CIA's computer systems didn't talk to each other. You know what we said 15 years ago? Oh, we're going to fix that. Right. We're going to share information locally. We're going to share information with everybody. Are we any better at it?
We're a lot better at it. The task forces that are present in every major city, in a lot of smaller cities, between the FBI and local law enforcement is outstanding. I'm still in the business to a degree, and every week we work with task force agents who are most times they're police officers, and that does work. They do share with local law.
But we could make it easier for you guys to do your jobs and not harder. And it doesn't sound like we're doing that.
No, we're not. We're not. We're politically correct. We're more concerned about, privacy issues than we are about protecting our country.
Yeah, and we were talking about that before. It goes, okay, what type of country do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a country that respects your rights of free speech? Of course you do. Do you want civil liberties? Of course you do. But you can't live in that country and also expect you're going to be protected 24/7 without being willing to understand that sometimes you might have to have a look taken at you. You might have to have somebody take a look, and that's the whole thing. Oh, God, don't get me started, Danny. Look what you've done. You got me all fired up now.
You know what denies you your liberty more than anything in the world is a terrorist shooting you in the chest with a rifle.
Yeah, there's your
that
liberty.
That takes away your liberty a lot more than the FBI conducting an investigation of you.
Appreciate your time. As always, stay safe.
It's always great.
There you go.
You guys have a great day.
All the best. Danny Coulson.
Danny. By the way, you brought up a great point.
Good Texan.
Now, and they didn't used to work together. FBI, DEA, ATF, CIA. Now they do share a database, and you're 100% right. They didn't do that. All the agencies working together. And it wasn't because of a power struggle. It just wasn't set up that way until after 9/11.
Michael Hayden is with the Chertoff Agency. He ran the NSA and the CIA and is primarily featured in Spy Masters, a documentary I love on Showtime that still runs. We'll get to him later this week as well. All right, way late for traffic here, but we're trying to fix a few things, maybe.
Our hearts go out to all of those affected by this atrocity. All we can say is you are not on your own right now. Your tragedy is our tragedy. Theater is a place where every race, creed, sexuality, and gender is equal, is embraced, and is loved. Hate will never win.
When something bad happens, we have three choices. We let it define us, we let it destroy us, or we let it strengthen us.
Tonight, our joy is tinged with sorrow. Art can entertain us and educate us, and in times like these, console us.
Barbara Streisand, Frank Langella, and James Gordon, I thought, did a pretty nice job in general last night, but certainly with all things going on. I thought he's a pretty good host. What'd you think, Dean?
I couldn't agree with you more. I thought he did a fantastic job. Imagine the kind of planning that must have gone into, putting on a show like that with, big song and dance numbers and comedy and all the things that, go into an award show. And then suddenly this happens hours before your broadcast, this tragedy happens. And they have to make some last-minute adjustments. I thought that Corden struck the perfect balance of solemnity, dignity, grace, and at the same time was still able to be very entertaining.
Opening on the show was tremendous.
Yeah, it was strong. I mean, from his opening words, which we just heard, and then they did the cast of Hamilton did a spoof about Corden, and then Corden did this big elaborate musical number, all very appropriate, all very fitting. It seemed like there was just enough of tributes to the tragedy that had taken place earlier that day. All the celebrities, everybody in the audience wearing silver ribbons. honoring the victims in Orlando.
The only thing that I thought was a little clumsy was the concert outside thing.
Didn't need to be there.
Yeah, the shows that they kind of jammed those in. Now Hamilton, I understand, is still winning awards. I mean, it's 8 o'clock in the morning here, 9 o'clock in New York. They're still
It's like that billboard that you see on the highway of the national debt. That's just going and going and going and going. That's what's happening with awards.
How many awards did Hamilton win?
11 in all.
Oh, just 11.
11 in all. They were nominated for 16. They won 11 in all. It was actually mathematically impossible for them to break the record number of Tony Awards that the producers won back in 2001, 12, because in many of the categories in which they did not win, they were competing against each other. There were two people from the show in the category, so obviously only one of them could win, but... Yeah, they did a phenomenal night. They won Best Musical. They won Best Director, Best Featured Actor.
Best Parking at the Theater.
Best Lead Actor. Best Juju Bees that you could buy at the concession stand. Even categories that they never even had at the Tony Awards before. They won last night.
Lin-Manuel Miranda apparently only speaks in rhyme, and good for him, because I thought his speech was cool. You got a clip of that?
I do. This was he personally won Best Book, which is the story of writing the story that's in any play, and also Best Score. And when he went up on the stage to accept the award for Best Score, he thanked his wife in a very beautiful and poetic way. But his words about the tragedy in Orlando, definitely the emotional high point of the night, that left all over the web. All you see is that people were sobbing. People were in tears hearing this.
When senseless acts of tragedy remind us that nothing here is promised, not one day. The show is proof that history remembers. We live through times when hate and fear seem stronger. We rise and fall and light from dying embers, remembrances that hope and love last longer. And love is 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 love cannot be killed or swept aside. I sing Vanessa's symphony. Eliza tells her story. Now fill the world with music, love, and pride. Thank you so much for this.
I mean, I know the guy does it every night, but to be honest, it takes a lot of guts to stand up in front of all of your protégés and colleagues and people on Broadway, because that's as judgmental a crowd as there is anywhere.
That's true.
And to have the guts to do that, I thought it was cool.
He put his emotions right out, just wore it right on his arm, unashamedly. He almost broke down. I'm not going to lie, I did when I was watching it. It was so powerful after...
How good do you think his wife felt the way he was talking about her?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was just beautiful and an example of how poetic... how love and art filled this man is. I can't wait to see what his next projects are going to be.
And I don't know if you know off the top of your head, but we have tickets for Hamilton Chicago going on sale. Is it next Friday?
They will go on sale. Yes, that is correct. Yeah, I think it's next Friday. But the show will open here in September. If you go to BroadwayInChicago.com, that's where you can get all the details on, purchasing tickets. Got to be very careful. There's lots of counterfeits that are out there right now. But BroadwayInChicago.com, all of their box offices, their websites, their phone numbers, so you can see what all the talk is about of this show that's coming to town.
Meanwhile, Dean and I are putting on for people that can't get Hamilton tickets, Dean and I are doing a show called Fillmore that we're doing off Broadway in Chicago.
That's how Hamilton started,
right?
Off Broadway, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, this is off Broadway in Chicago.
I thought you guys were doing Taft.
No, we were going to do Taft because of the tub.
Oh, okay, right.
We like Fillmore
neither one of us would do the bathtub scene.
No, it's true, and we're still researching this, but we believe he was the only Millard ever to occupy the White House.
To lead any country in the world.
That's right. There's never been a nation leader named Millard.
No, no, or Fillmore.
Here's that baby being born and go, we shall call him Millard. Really? Shall we? All right, before I let you go, Kristen Chenoweth concert tickets. Now, you know the little Kristen Chenoweth, don't you?
Love her.
And she's tiny, right?
She's this big.
Totally portable?
I'm holding my fingers just like an inch away from each other. She is super tiny. Her voice is even tinier. But when she belts out a song, you've been sung to. She's amazing. She was in... the show that ran forever, whose name I can't think of right now. What's the Wizard of Oz show?
Wicked.
Thank you. Yeah. Wicked. That if it's not Hamilton, I just don't care.
Whatever. Hold on. Hamilton just won another award. Emmy and Tony Award-winning Kristen Chenoweth with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra for One Night Only.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Monday, June 20th. Dean has to be there. It's a law. And we qualified people last week to win these tickets and picked a winner. Are you ready for the name? Allison Sturzinger of Lake in the Hills.
No.
Yep, that one.
I know her.
Of the famous Sturzingers.
Get the heck out of here.
Allison's got a couple of box seats. This is like $400 tickets with Kristen Chenoweth and members of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, CSO.org, or 312-294-3000 for tickets.
And Steve doesn't know this, but our promotion department threw in at the last minute. She'll also get to have a supporting role in Millard Fillmore, the musical.
No, it's just Millard.
Oh, just Millard.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't even know that we trimmed that down.
Yeah. We were going to call it Fillmore, and we didn't feel like it had the same impact as Millard.
Millard. Okay. So she'll have like the joke matters anymore.
Right. And by the way, we're doing it at a 7-Eleven down the street from the actual Broadway in Chicago.
They have very spacious parking lots there.
Yeah, so it's going to be great. Capacity 7, but we're hoping to sell it out. All right, sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. That's Dean. We'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Dane is at Channel 9 in case you need him. And at 8:19, let's get traffic, and then we're going to check in with Steve Roberts at ABC News about the presidential race in regards to yesterday and what Trump and Hillary may or may not be saying about it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And believe me, she'll say, I don't want to about... You look at what she wants to do. She wants to abolish the Second Amendment. Just believe me.
This is someone running to be president of the United States of America, a country facing a gun violence epidemic, and he's talking about more guns in our schools.
Radical Islamic terrorism is just, you know, taking over, and we can't let that happen.
Through all his loose talk, there's one constant theme: demonizing Muslims and playing right into the hands of ISIS.
In the case of the killer yesterday, born in New York, raised in Florida, you're not keeping him out. You'd have to deport him. Where's Trump going next? Where's Hillary going next? Brad Melke, ABC News, joins us on the presidential race and what they're saying about Orlando, or what they might say. Hi, Brad.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
You know, under the circumstances, everything's fine. Thank you.
Yeah, same here. All right. So, what is Trump got in some Twitter trouble yesterday? But then again, it was a day of the week, and Hillary had an initial statement. What are they saying today, or what are they expected to say?
Sure. Well, in fact, both of them called into several different morning shows, and Donald Trump called into Good Morning America just about an hour ago, really renewing calls for this ban on Muslim immigrants and this ban on Syrian refugees. George Stephanopoulos pointed out, you know, as I think you just said, that this actually wouldn't have affected yesterday, and Trump conceded as such. Of course, the suspected gunman was born in New York, was an American citizen, so he wouldn't be affected by this ban. But Trump said his ideology is predominantly in the Middle East, and you want to make sure that you keep people who might be sympathetic that ideology out of the U.S. Hillary Clinton came on just a few minutes later and basically said that's ridiculous. What we need are more gun reforms, specifically on assault weapons, which is an interesting point that I think her campaign is bringing up purposefully, since Donald Trump back in 2000 voiced his support for an assault weapons ban. So that it might be the argument that you see play out over the coming days.
There was a speech that was supposed to go down today or tomorrow from Trump about past Clinton scandals. Because of the scope of Orlando, is he putting that off, or is he still doing it?
Well, so he'll be in New Hampshire today. He has canceled a rally. He's still doing a speech, and like you said, that was supposed to be exclusively about Hillary Clinton and her history, her past, painting her as sort of this corrupt, crooked figure. However, now it's going to be almost exclusively about foreign policy, about counterterror operations and keeping America safe. He's still expected to talk about Hillary Clinton, but probably in the context of what he calls her ineffectiveness in the war on terror. So he'll be talking there. And then, of course, Hillary Clinton, you know, she was supposed to have this big triumphant moment on Wednesday where she would be standing next to Barack Obama, who just endorsed her. They would go to that battleground state of Wisconsin. Well, now that trip is off as well. They will postpone their get-together for a later date. So both candidates trying to take control of their schedule, but also of the larger message for this week.
Does terrorism become more front and center again? Obviously, the self-served nature of whatever Trump's going to talk about is still front and center for him. But Don't both of these candidates have to make this item one or item two for the near-term future?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a story like Gonzalo Curiel, the federal judge, sort of takes a big step back, doesn't it? I mean, when you compare something like this, deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history, to that. So for every one of those moments, there's sort of an unexpected moment like this that can really define a campaign. So I think both campaigns are really sort of digging deep right now to figure out how they can portray themselves as the one that can keep America safe. You see Donald Trump basically saying that Democrats, including Obama, the White House, and Hillary Clinton, have no spine when it comes to terror. And then you see Hillary Clinton talking a little bit less about Donald Trump, making it more about herself. Implicitly, the message sort of being, listen, I've been here before. You can trust me. You don't want sort of this new character on the scene who you don't know enough about. So those are the sort of messages that are competing. And Donald Trump, of course, getting there first, he's sort of his own rapid response team, right? Within minutes of learning about a news story, he's already on Twitter. So the Clinton campaign dealing with an unusual opponent in that regard.
Brad, what's next as far as this investigation is concerned? I know this morning all of the bodies were released from Pulse. They have counselors on hand. What's next as far as the whole investigation goes?
Well, one of the things they're still doing is contacting families. I mean, of the 49 victims and the gunman made the 50th fatality there on the scene, they've only been able to get in contact, they said, with 24 families so far. So that's sort of first and foremost their operation for the day. And then I think there's going to be forensics of exactly what went down and when. They were giving some details as to the shooter and what he did while in the nightclub. In the days leading up to that, that's going to be the big question. And FBI Director James Comey is going to be talking today about just how Omar Mateen was able to purchase a gun just within the last week, despite being questioned about terror ties three different times a few years ago. So there are often checks with suspected terrorists or people who might have ties to sort of give a silent warning when they do try to purchase a gun. Basically lets the purchase go through, but a red flag is raised. In this case, no red flag was raised. And I think the FBI is going to have a lot to answer for from regular people like us, but also government officials in the coming days.
Let's go on this, Brad. Ramadan started last Sunday, runs through July 5th. ISIS said, we want all who support us to go out and commit acts against Westerners during the month of Ramadan. It'll end just short of the conventions, but does that impact any of this? And are the security briefings, the presidencies, are those going to Clinton and Trump at this point?
They do get classified intelligence briefings to sort of get them up to speed, since one of them will indeed be the next president. Also, the interesting thing about ISIS is the fact that, you know, this, we don't know what his training was, but it did not seem like he was directly affiliated with ISIS beyond swearing allegiance to them. And of course, this is sort of the playbook that ISIS has been operating on for the last few years, and hoping to get people inspired to commit acts of violence in their name without necessarily having to go to all the training camps and ingest all the material to sort of spark this worldwide movement that is, frankly, much more difficult to predict. So in this case, ISIS's strategy really was played out to the letter by the alleged gunman Omar Mateen.
Brad Mielke, ABC News. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
How coming up on the right side, how over the line to his father, son to father, back into the score! Number nine, father. And number five, Mark Howe. And the crowd appreciates that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Danny, so do I. It's just a pleasure to see this big guy out there. Look at the work he does here. Here's the backhand shot, and he had something on it, too. I think it may have deflected just in front of the net, and it beat Denny Herron cleanly, but Big Father Time still doing his thing out here, and they're going to give him a standing ovation here in the Montreal Forum.
The greatest of them all, yes, the greatest of them all. You can have your choice of all the rest. If you're a Howe fan, you've got the very best.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, is any of this?
Floral Saskatchewan, the story all began.
Gordie Howe, that goal you played, that's his last goal he scored in the National Hockey League. And he has a backhand from the left circle. It's like as hard as a slap shot. Tony Esposito joins us now. Gordie Howe died the other day at 88. Hey, Tony, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I'm just relaxing. We sort of got ended the season a little early this year. I hope it doesn't happen on that next year, that's for sure.
Dave has the odds for 2016-17. Dave, why don't you tell Tony Esposito who the favorite is?
So, Tony, the favorite for the Stanley Cup in 2017, according to Vegas, the Chicago Blackhawks at 6-1.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's very nice to hear. I think we'll have a bounce back year. We played a lot of hockey recently, and it sort of set us back a little bit. And now the guys will regroup this summer, and we'll come up with a big effort.
So you get into the league, and Gordie Howe is, what, a 15, 20-year guy almost at that point.
Yeah.
Was he at the peak of his game when you got him, or was he slowing down a little bit?
Well, what happened was he was with the Detroit Red Wings, as you know.
Yep.
And he was still playing very well. I mean, he wasn't up to his, the quality he was at 34 or 33. He was about 38 or 39, and he was still, you noticed him out there, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
He was always a threat.
And did he have a particular go-to shot or something you had to look out for?
Well, the thing with him was he got the puck off. He had a quick release and very accurate around the net. And he had a heavy shot.
Explain to fans what that means, a heavy shot.
Well, when he shoots it, it hurts you a little bit. It's like a pitcher that, like Nolan Ryan style.
He could bring it.
He hurts. Yeah.
So, and you had to respect him because he was Gordie Howe. You know, I heard your old teammate Bobby Hall talking about playing some of the best games of his career against Gordie Howe. Is it hard to rank guys from era to era? Like, you can compare Gordie Howe to Gretzky or to Bobby or any of those guys, or they're just great because they were great in their time?
Well, I mean, the guy lasted 25 years, 20-some years. He had to bring something to the table, don't you think?
Amen to that.
Yeah, and he was a tremendous athlete. If he was playing today, he'd still be one of the top players today. The guy was big and strong, fast, had all the tools. And, it's a little bit of a different era, naturally, because everything has evolved. Every sport's the same, The guys get better and the game has become more, not regimented, but more focused in the game plans and all these with the videos, and there's no secrets anymore. In other words, you go in to play a team and they know everything about you. They know how you come out of your end, how you carry the puck in, everything about you. So usually you can't surprise anybody. So the best team usually wins.
26 seasons in the National Hockey League, 6 in the WHA, and a couple in the high minors. I mean, you're talking about 34 seasons of professional hockey? That's unbelievable.
That is amazing to be able to endure and last and stay healthy enough. That was amazing. But he was a dedicated athlete. And he worked hard at it, and he was, his whole life was hockey, and he trained and stayed in shape.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, Tony, the longevity. I mean, he was his own era. Real, I mean, he spanned from the original six era to the expansion era, mm-hmm. the birth of the WHA, and I just wonder if we'll ever see a player – and obviously this is theoretical, but will we ever see a player play for that kind of length of time, given the demands of playing? Not that there weren't demands on Gordie Howe and you guys, obviously, but given the travel involved in the game today, involved in the money that guys are making.
Can't happen.
Will it ever happen again?
I don't think it will because... I mean, let's be realistic. The guys are bigger and stronger today, and they're faster. And the whole combination of things, and you just can't play at that level for guys last 10, 12 years, 14 years at the most. It's such a fast-paced game today, and like you say, you play 82 games. You're traveling all over the place, and it sort of wears you down.
Tony, though, you talk longevity and endurance, both with Gordy and you, and even the players of today. You know, literally, you get stitched up, you go back in, you play hurt, you play with broken bones. Do you ever laugh? I don't want to say laugh, but chuckle at maybe some of the other sports. I won't say which one's baseball. But a player maybe gets a hangnail or a blister, and then they're out for 15 days
or whatnot.
No, the only thing that, like, there was a ball player just recently who said that he needed a day off because he was tired. You know, I don't think you want to say that to your coach or when you're playing hockey, I'll tell you that.
How would that have gone if you told old Mr. Wirtz that?
Well, I don't think that would have worked. I don't feel like playing today.
Yeah, I'm a little tired. I need a day off.
You don't last too long doing same things like that.
Amen to that. Did Gordie Howe beat you a few times, or is he one of...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I remember playing a game in Detroit against him, and I think it was about 69, and he scored a goal on me, and he came in, and he shot the puck, and I stopped the puck, and he literally pushed me into the net, and they allowed the goal. Oh. I was furious.
Oh, no.
But that's how he was. He wanted to score so bad, he did anything. He pushed me in the net.
Well, and he fought his own fights, too, didn't he? He'd scrap if he needed to.
Oh, he was tough. Nobody horsed around with him, believe me. He didn't look for trouble. He never hurt anybody. You know, he wasn't a cheap shot or anything. He was physical, aggressive, and if you played with him, then you're going to get it back.
Sure. But those are guys you respect. Memories of Gordie Howe from Tony Esposito. Go play some golf or something, but thanks for getting up for me.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
It's great talking to you, buddy. Hold the line. It's Tony Esposito. And by the way, that guy, the guy you just heard there, Gordie Howe used to shoot pucks at him.
Yeah. How about that?
When he wasn't wearing a helmet either.
Yeah. One of the all-time legends. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Legend. No question. But in all fairness, it ought to be pointed out, Jaromír Jagr is, and I'm not comparing him to Gordie Howe, but in terms of longevity, we've had some guys, Chris Chelios. Jagr.
Yeah, but 20 years is a phenomenal career at this point. 20 years, Gordie Howe is halfway there.
Yeah, well, that's, yes, that's true.
Gordie Howe's going, ooh, I only got another 15 in me.
Yeah. That's
insane.
Someday I'll start thinking about retirement.
52 he's playing.
Unbelievable.
It's, 52. You know, I was at 52 trying to get out of a chair. Texter brought up a question. I don't know the answer to it. Do you know tomorrow's Flag Day? So, if you are flying your flag at half staff today, out of respect for the victims in Orlando, what do you do tomorrow on Flag Day? Do you raise it to full staff?
I think you keep it at half staff. Do you not?
I don't know.
I mean, I believe once the national declaration is that flags are to be at half staff, I think that's the way they stay. Don't they, Orion? Yeah, Orion thinks so, too.
Right. Well, anybody else who wants to chime in, we're more than willing to look at various pieces of advice. I don't question Orion or you. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was a good question by one of our listeners.
And by the way, too, on flag etiquette, I know we do this every year and whatnot. I saw a beautiful flag the other day that had been kept up since Memorial Day, but it was torn. It was kind of flapping in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can replace those. They're not that expensive, but you know, you shouldn't really fly a flag that's in tatters.
No, when it gets to a certain point where it can show some disrespect for the country it represents, you do need to replace it.
Yeah,
I think I'm right about this, too. Most American Legion halls, if you can't afford to replace your flag, will get you a flag. Like if you go to a VFW or an American Legion and go, listen, I got an old flag and I'm a little short on cash. Is there anybody give me a flag? You'll get a flag.
Yeah.
So, but if you have any insight into the flag flying situation... the number to call and the number to text is 312-981-7200. Big O's here. Oh, am I right about that?
Yeah, I think you are. And interesting you bring up Flag Day. Saturday at the Vintage Wings and Wheels Museum at Poplar Grove Airport, I emceed their annual Flag Day presentation. And just a quick note, the gentleman who started it, Captain Chuck Downey, started the ceremony. 2004, I think, and he has conducted it ever since.
Okay.
He passed away in February, so they asked me to come out and do it. But Captain Downey was the youngest naval aviator in the history of the United States. George H.W. Bush was the second youngest, but Chuck Downey was the youngest, and he has
Is
a letter
right?
from the president saying, yep, you beat me by 11 days.
Well, that's a nice legacy. Did you get a chance to tell that story?
Was told, and there were about 200 people that turned out for it. It was a nice day. We had the flyover, the missing man flyover, and so
you always get a lump in your throat for that, don't you?
You really
goosebumps
do.
And the whole deal.
You really do. So
nice to see you. Everything well?
Everything is well.
Okay.
Long as I can move.
Right side of the grass and all those things.
My favorite expression from Orion. It's nice to see you. And Lorian says,
better to be seen than viewed.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. If suddenly people are going, what time is the viewing? You're probably not going to like that party.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
912. Well, a PGA Tour doesn't get it. You ought to be in Chicago every year. Multiple stops, but the LPGA Tour is back. And we love it. It's the UL International Crown, a very unique team competition featuring the United States, Australia, Thailand, China, England, Chinese Taipei, Japan, and the Republic of Korea. Craig Kan, who we all watch for years on the Golf Channel, is the Chief Communications Officer now for the LPGA. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. Good to be with you. You actually could do my job. You just rattled off those countries like you had the press release in your hand.
No, I just memorized it. You know me.
That's solid. Eddie, you are absolutely on top of it. By
totally
the way,
pro.
Mr. Ennett, I grew up listening to this guy.
Me too.
I mean, I'm a Chicago kid. I went to Lyons Township High School. It's so great to be back in this city, and I'm excited for Media Day today and looking forward to the event in July, and I hope you guys will all come out and be with us.
Well, and I'm telling you, I'm glad the LPGA had the wherewithal, the ability to come here because, Craig, you know, and I know you guys have had this conversation for years, but I told the commissioner, the PGA Tour, what are you doing? How can you not have a regular event in Chicago? It's insane. So I hope you guys find a reason to keep coming back.
We will be back, in fact, next year. The KPMG Women's PGA Championship goes to Olympia Fields next year and Kemper Lakes the following year. So if you want to get down to it, and given the great finish yesterday with Lydia Ko and Brooke Henderson out in Seattle, which is where
death.
I was last week, just amazing stuff. And so we're looking forward to coming to Chicago. I mean, I grew up at Butler National and Cog Hill watching the Western Open, and that was me at 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 years old, and to not have a regular stop is tough, but we're going to capitalize on that. We're bringing great golf to this city.
The UL International Crown, we'll tell you, get tickets and all about it, but explain how the competition will work.
Well, first off, it's been a two-year process, and you've got 8 countries that qualified based on the combined world rankings of their players. So the players from Korea, let's just say, you know, might be number 1 in the world or 2 in the world, 8 in the world, 12 in the world. You add up those numbers. Let's say you get a number of 24, which just happened to be the best because they were the top qualifying country. The United States finished 2nd. So you get 8 countries that qualified. They did that after our first major of the year back on April 1st. And then for the next 3 months, those players, which already qualified their countries, they battle to finish in the top 4 for their respective countries, if that makes sense, based on their world ranking. And that just finished up last night in Seattle. So right now we've got 32 players qualified for 8 countries. They'll play 4 days of team match play at the Merritt Club in July. There are no captains in this thing. So they got to figure out amongst themselves who's going to go out against which other country. And the 8 teams are divided into 2 pools. They'll play pool play for 3 days and then singles on Sunday to hand out the crown. And somebody's going to be crowned best golfing nation in the world.
And it's team best ball?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So a lot of fun in that format. And you'll have the top 2 from each pool that will qualify after Saturday night. But then we need 5 to play singles on Sunday. So there will be a wild card country. There'll be a playoff for sure on Saturday night. And then the great thing is if it all came down to tied, and it's cumulative points over the 4 days. So if it came down to a tie, every country puts one name in an envelope, and you don't know who that player is. And if it came down to sudden death, country versus country, we'll find out on that tee who that player is. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So going to be a great week.
Craig, who's playing for the United States, and which country right now would you say is the favorite? Who has the edge?
Well, you know, I mean, you know what's really interesting is Arya Jatanugarn, who won three times in the month of May and finished third last night, brings Thailand into this thing, and she's guaranteed a win for Thailand. I love that. You know, she's 20 years old and decides to sit next to me in the press room in Seattle the other day and say they're going to win.
And I guarantee you, she's never heard of Joe Namath.
Yeah, exactly. Or Mike Ditka.
Right.
But right now, you would probably think Korea would be the favorite. But, you know, Inbee Park's dicey. I mean, she's the top player for Korea, but she's got that thumb injury, and she's struggling a bit. If she were unable to play, they'd go down to the fifth player, which is Hana Jang. Amy Yang is number four. So at any rate, for the United States, you asked me about the U.S., you've got Stacey Lewis, you've got Lexi Thompson, Jarena Pillar, and Christy Kerr. So that's a really good American team. Brittany Linscombe was trying to squeeze in there over the weekend, but she did not have a great Sunday, and we'll find out. I mean, look, I'm the communications guy, right? I'm probably not going to go on record and pick a country, but if you're going to go strictly on rankings, you'd say it's Korea or the United States. But it didn't work out that way the last go-around when Spain won the thing when we were at Caves Valley.
And as much of a golf nut as I am, whenever I'm having a tempo problem, which is every other day, I'll watch an LPGA player. Yeah, because the fluidity of an LPGA player's, top player's swing is so perfect. It's a metronome thing that Hogan and everybody used to talk about. Some of these women just crush it. How far does Lexi Thompson bang it off the tee?
287.
Yeah.
On average. Leads the tour in driving distance, but she's also like top three in greens and regulation. So it tells
so
you.
So she gets a hot putter any week. She's never losing.
You just nailed it. You took the words right out of my mouth. And she knows that too. I mean, that's kind of been the story. My whole thing is this. I know the Merritt Club's a bit of a drive on the north side, right? But it's got great history. It's a fabulous club. And I know this for sure, having grown up in this area, Chicago golf, I mean, it's phenomenal, right? And the golf fans in this city are fantastic.
Yep.
So we've got a 3-year run here that's going to kick off with this event. I'm looking forward to media day today out at Topgolf Wooddale. So I don't know if you guys are headed out there. Steve, I'd love to have you. Mm-hmm. I'd love to have any of the three of you out there, or all three.
Even Dave?
I would love to have Dave. Dave's voice just makes me go, gosh, I love this city. So, Dave.
How very kind.
You're very kind.
Dave, you get the last question for Craig.
Well, Craig, I just wanted to ask, what is the hope for this event? This is the second time, so it's you don't have the tradition of some of the more established events, but as you look down the road, where do you see this 4, 6, 8 years down the road?
Well, first off, I'm gonna be completely transparent and honest about this thing and tell you where the potential shortcoming of it is in a second. The beauty of it is that it's eight countries, right? It's not the rest of the world against the United States like the President's Cup, and I'm not criticizing that event. I believe this showcases the LPGA's true, what we are. We're a global tour. We have players that represent more than 30 countries on our tour each and every week. We play in 15 countries on our schedule each year. We are televised in more than 175 countries each and every week. So we're the Olympics each week. We just don't have a podium for gold, silver, bronze. That in itself is fantastic. So you got eight countries that have to qualify. I think this event, granted, this is only year two, and Chicago's got a big opportunity here to really take this thing to the next level with all the different cultural bases. I think this thing is going to be really big. I think it could be close to the Solheim Cup in a short time. Give it 10 years. We're going to Korea in 2018, and I think that'll be unreal.
Right.
But the thing of it is that Brooke Henderson couldn't get Canada to qualify on her own. They need more Brooke Hendersons to make it. Suzanne Pedersen can't get Norway into the field because they don't have enough Norwegian stars. Lydia Ko can't get New Zealand in there quite yet. So if you're saying, whoa, the top players aren't all there, that's true. We got to figure that piece out, or they've got to grow their country. That would be where this thing can really take off. But I can tell you there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of media attention. And in 2 years or 4 years short time, we've come a long way. And I don't want to put pressure on Chicago, but I feel like you all are going to come up big for us and really take this thing to the next level.
And the prices are great, too. You can get week passes for a tremendous price you can't touch for major sports normally. Daily tickets are just $20. And you can go to the website, ulcrown.com. Order your tickets right there. That's the easiest way to go. And the Merritt Club's beautiful. It's an easy drive, and it's worth it. Craig touched on this, but this is a melting pot like New York is, and all of these countries will have representatives who are going to see their teams.
Absolutely. Or you can just call me if you're one of the three of you guys, and I'll make sure you're standing on the first tee.
There you go.
I do the announcements in the morning.
Craig has me volunteering, actually, at 286 to see if Lexi Thompson can hit me.
I've got you, and I've got Dave on hole number 13. He'll be the guy there telling people to shush on the green.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Nice. Holding up a little quiet sign.
I always wanted to do that.
Dave, you're the shush guy.
Yeah, your shush sign will be in Chinese just so we can make this thing global.
Top Golf Wooddale, that's a great location. Nothing but fun there. Good food, too. And what time do you start today?
I'm going to be there at 11:30 for a meeting with UL, our proud sponsor. And then we kick it off in the afternoon around 1 o'clock. Right now, Aria Jatanyagarn should have just gotten off her red-eye flight from Seattle. She's joining us with her sister, Moria Jatanyagarn. And we've also got Mel Reed from England. Who's going to be there, and Shenzhen Feng from China. So we're bringing them all. I mean, there's been a lot of support for this thing from our players, and that's the beauty of the LPGA. I mean, you kind of said it at the beginning. Our players say, yeah, Craig, I'll help out, but they do another thing. They'll say, hey, Craig, hey, Mike Wong, Commissioner, how can I help out? And so when it comes big events like this, we don't struggle to get players to participate, and that's a real gift that we have on our tour.
By the way, Craig didn't want to mention this, but if you can spell any of the Thailand players' names correctly, free week passed for the entire week.
Well, listen, I've got to mention all 32 today, and I'm hosting the gala on the night of the 19th.
Dude, you got it nailed.
I've got to do the first tee. I mean, I remember honoring Sadia Bonpat from the last go around for Thailand. I mean, these are things that you rehearse and you practice, because not all of these players, by the way, take Japan for instance, are full time LPGA players. They might be playing on the JLPGA or play in Asia. So, you know, not the case, obviously, for the U.S. or even Korea, but some of the country names are not that easy. So I'm not taking them to a fifth-grade school class.
Well, a Yaka Watanabe to you, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it. And for more information, again, get your tickets and any information, really. The website's up and ready to rock. What is it again?
Isn't it ulcrown.com? Isn't that what we're talking about? ulinternationalcrown.com? Come on. I mean, or go to lpga.com, click on the little tab at the top that says International Crown, do the drop down, and you get the whole thing. How's that? That we get two clicks. We get both sites.
That's exactly right. ulcrown.com, lpga.com. Thank you, buddy. Hold on. That's Craig Kinn. Good guy. Good Chicago guy.
Yeah, and get out to the Merritt Club. That's going to be a really cool event to watch.
There's so much good golf in this town. Golf courses and stuff. Matter of fact, thanks to my buddy Emil Esposito, who had Pat Brady and I out there to play golf the other day. We got rained out. But anytime you see Emil, and the Glen Club's in beautiful shape. So we're lucky to have such great golf. But support the UL International Crown, and let's keep pro golf coming back to town. 9:23, more in a moment on 720 WGN. More on Orlando before we're done at 10. You know, it was such a nice weekend. And Saturday was so great. Saturday, I actually, for the first time in her 5.5 months, I got a chance to babysit my granddaughter alone. Because it was fake Father's Day. Ross is going to be out of town for Father's Day.
Oh.
So Ross and Lauren came out with Abigail. And I said, well, why don't you guys go to lunch? Because Abigail and I haven't hung out alone yet. So we had a couple of hours together.
And how did that go?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. She loves you again?
It's great. Yeah, it was only a couple of times where, you know, she...
freaked out.
Was freaked out.
Were you nervous?
Because, you know, with this goatee, I've said this before, I look a little bit like Colonel Sanders' bouncer. So it can be scary for a little one. But no, she loves me. Yeah, smiling it up, having a good time. We played a lot of really creative games, like sit Abigail on the couch, see if she tips over. You know, stuff like that. You know, so it was wild.
Were you scared at all?
Was I scared?
Nervous?
No.
Well, it's been a while since you know
what I felt. You know, it's funny you say that, Dave. Though, having owned and operated a couple of these, you know, Ross and Amy.
Yeah.
You know, babies don't bother me. However, I forgot how tiring it is.
It yeah. is.
I'm like an hour in and I'm going, wow.
Did you change your diaper?
No. No, I was waiting.
Oh, you got away with that?
Did you?
No, she didn't need it.
She didn't need it?
No, she didn't need it.
And what's her food of choice these days?
She's not on food yet.
She's going with the formula still?
She's still on the boob.
She's still opting for the boob? Yeah.
So did you get any spit up or anything?
Oh, she's thrown up on me before.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, we took that to the next level last visit, I think. Mm-hmm. But it was cool just hanging out, her and I.
By the way, that kid is so cute.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, you're not in a position. I mean, you think you're not really objective about it.
I said it before. All the other grandkids should quit now.
Yeah, you're not totally objective, but I think we can safely say she is adorable kid with those cheeks.
Yeah. Oh, and then Saturday night, I grilled out, and you know who cooked with me? Lauren. Lauren and I cooked together.
How nice is that? Yeah, your daughter-in-law, Lauren.
Yeah, Ross's wife, yeah. Yeah, so it was a great day.
Was it like bonding?
No, we don't need to bond. Okay. We're fine.
Well, right. Ross had a great day. He got to go out to lunch with his wife, and then he didn't have to cook on the grill.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much my son cooks in general. He may cook. I don't know. But yeah, and by the way, Ross says hi to everybody. You know, he's working with Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage and says hi to everybody.
Hi, Ross.
Doesn't he miss us?
Yeah, that's all he could talk about.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. At 9:29, the Steve Cochran Show continues. This, by the way, is show number 669. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, at Cochran Show on Twitter. And we're back after this. Oh, wait. What do you got, Simber?
So is Ross out of town because he's really doing Father's Day with Hochberg?
Yes. Yeah, he's taking it to that level. He is actually spending Father's Day with David Hochberg.
Nice.
All right, you're fired. Back with the big story next.
It is with great sadness that I share we have not 20 but 50 casualties. In addition to the shooter, there are another 53 that are hospitalized.
My son was in the nightclub with his boyfriend and other friends. Boyfriend has been shot multiple times.
This was an act of terror and an act of hate.
According to law enforcement sources, his name was Omar Mateen.
We know that this individual did purchase at least 2 firearms. He is not a prohibited person, so you can legally walk into a gun dealership and acquire and purchase firearms.
The FBI first became aware of Mateen in 2013 when he made inflammatory comments to coworkers alleging possible terrorist ties.
Somewhere between 2 and 5 a.m., he called 911 to say he was pledging allegiance to ISIS.
As Americans, we are united in grief, in outrage, and in resolve to defend our people.
9:43, a new development in this story, actually from People Magazine, of all places. Andre will tell you about that in a second. Here's what we know. The shooter is an American citizen, born in New York, raised in Florida. So the Trump blockade wouldn't work. If you go to the extension of Trump's big plan, you'd have to start throwing people out of the country. Why wasn't this guy caught ahead of time? Because once again, one list isn't talking to another list. And inexplicably, and we'll take this up with Senator Durbin later this week, but inexplicably, you can be on a terror watch list and still be able to buy a gun. And this guy, after domestic violence troubles with the police, after a coworker quit his job over him.
And reported him 3 separate times.
To the boss and to the police. Mm-hmm. Somehow, all of that information wasn't coordinated to the point where a week ago he was able to buy the guns he needed to go ahead and commit this crime. And now People Magazine is reporting what?
People Magazine is reported, this is according to a law enforcement source who wishes to remain anonymous, that the gunman might have scouted Walt Disney World as a potential target. That's when he was with his wife, Noor, who left him, obviously. But they visited Walt Disney World in April.
It would make total sense, right? You're in Orlando.
Yes.
You have an idea that you're going to kill as many people as possible. You're that crazy. You're that sick. You're that much of a coward. Where would you make the most impact? I wonder why he didn't go with Disney.
Well, mainly because they said that metal detectors were installed outside the Magic Kingdom in areas, and he didn't think he was going to be able to get through.
As opposed to a nightclub. Sources,
yeah, as opposed to the nightclub, which I don't think had metal detectors.
His father, as you've heard, is apologizing. His father, to some wild reports about his father, who came out yesterday and said that he wasn't a terrorist, but he got mad at seeing two men kiss. So you kill 50?
Well, also, too, the coworker said that he would, when he would get violent, he would scream slurs about
African Americans.
Right. It was N word this.
Women. Yeah. N word
for gays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Derogatory toward women.
I mean, he's clearly twisted, clearly sick. Yeah. The father sounds like a nut job as well, in my opinion. But at any rate, the shooter is dead, and so are 50 others, and 53 are still going through hell in various states of destruction as surgeries continue. You know, in Los Angeles yesterday, we haven't talked about this all day, in Los Angeles yesterday, somebody either tipped off the police or there were people watching, you know, see something, say something, people watching and saw a guy acting suspicious. Police came in, asked the guy what he was doing. Eventually checked his car and found several weapons, several automatic weapons, along with handguns and explosives. And he said he was on his way to the Pride Parade.
Right. He was from Indiana.
And he drove L.A.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was arrested on Sunday. He was at the Pride Festival.
So we believe he's still being held, but we haven't heard much else about that story.
And here again, okay, so they found in his car three assault rifles, three high-capacity magazines, more ammunition, and a five-gallon bucket with chemicals that could be used to create an explosive device.
If that guy is not in custody, I want to know why.
Yeah.
And another texter says the FBI had an eye on this guy for a while. Why wasn't more preventative intervention taken once he went and bought a load of weapons? That's the other thing. If you have a criminal record and you are even legally, for whatever reason, you're legally able to buy guns, that should flash with the FBI. If you have a criminal record and you buy guns, even if you're buying guns legally, there should be an FBI alert of some case that some kind that comes in.
Well, it should all be in the same database, and there should be some sort of an asterisk saying, oh, you know what, we questioned this person twice. Because then it would probably make the gun owner, the gun shop owner who was selling guns legally, you know, the red flag would go up there.
And at this point, we haven't heard where he bought the guns. We just heard he bought them legally,
yeah,
right?
Correct.
I go back to what I said in the 7 o'clock hour this morning, and that is there's very few things you can do quickly in a case like this. You've got to change the attitude of young Middle Eastern kids about what America really is and have them stop buying in to the nonsense. You also have to deal with the mental health aspect of this. But all you can deal with right now is limiting the carnage when the next one happens, and the next one will. And as a supporter of the Second Amendment, I'm telling you, every one of these mass murders, almost without exception, they're all perpetrated, all or in part, with an AR-15-style rifle. Stop selling them. There's millions out there already. Stop selling them and limit the magazine capacity that allows so many rounds to be shot at one time without reloading. Because you literally, we're in a position now where you go, well, what's the one thing we can do? Stop the carnage from being as bad as it is. Limit the killing at the time that it goes on. And this is the way to do it. Again, we'll take this up with Durbin this week. The rest of it is figuring out this terror watch list thing. How could this guy not be on a watch list after two questionings from the FBI and after having the domestic violence problem and the problem at work?
So more information now is being released. You know, they're delving into his computers now, and they said that he had several Facebook accounts that he set up. He had searched the FBI. He had searched local police departments. He was searching the San Bernardino shooters. He was Googling the address of a local gun range. And on Sunday before the shooting, he posted his allegiance to ISIS. So, again, the communication
breakdown
here. This
was Saturday night,
here,
Sunday
this
morning?
This was Sunday before the massacre.
Okay, because so he got to the club allegedly at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
There are some people now who are saying he was at the club.
You mean partying at the club?
Well, he was there lingering at the club for maybe the balance of the evening. Several witnesses have now claimed they saw him earlier.
Oh, my God.
So the investigation continues. The question of where it goes from here continues. And my disappointment continues with the fact that the governor, the mayor, the police superintendent, all have barely responded to requests to come on today and talk about not only their statements on this, but also what Chicago's level of protection is. They're all still welcome and invited, obviously, but it's been basically silence and crickets from leadership in the city of the state of Illinois, other than a couple of prepared statements. It's 9:50. Bill and Andrea coming up. Wendy's off today. So you're filling in with Bill?
I'm Wendy, yes.
All right, see you in a bit. They'll do the show starting at 10. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
June is Pride Month. Learn more about it from WGN Radio and Tracy Baim, editor of the Windy City Times.
So Stonewall happens in New York, and by the next year, that summer in June, Chicago had its first Pride Parade. So it was one of a very few cities that the next year after Stonewall started its Pride Parade history. For many years, it was kind of ragtag, scraggly group of people that would be protesting for rights. In the mid-1970s, the fight against Anita Bryant in Florida, she was pushing back gay rights, right? And she was coming to Medina Temple, I think it was around 1977. Across the country, people rose up. Several thousand people showed up to protest around Medina Temple, and that boosted the numbers of people that attended Pride that year, and every year since then it's grown. But that was kind of a pivot point to become a much larger event, not just a few hundred people, but thousands and thousands of people.
Watch more stories like this at WGNradio.com. This salute to Pride on WGN Radio, sponsored by Jewel Osco. Your community is our community.
Grandview buys homes. You've been hearing us. Now it's time to call. Do you have a home to sell that is outdated or in need of repairs? We will buy your home as is. Do you have a vacant home or a rental property you want to sell? We'll buy your home today. Or maybe it's time to sell mom or dad's home. Call Grandview and we'll make the process simple and stress-free. There's no need to do any repairs or even any cleanup. And you pay no commissions and no closing costs. We buy homes in any condition and you can leave the stress and the mess to us. We've purchased hundreds of homes throughout Chicagoland. Call us today and we'll give you a no-obligation cash offer within 24 hours and close on your timetable. We are one of the largest independent buyers of homes in Chicagoland. Don't just call anyone. Call the name you can trust, Grandview Homes. Call us now at 888-345-BUY-HOMES. That's 888-345-BUY-HOMES. Or visit us at GrandviewHomes.com. Grandview Homes, accredited A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau.
The only inconvenience I had in the morning was to move our cars out of the garage before your trucks arrived, you know?
We are talking today with mega customer Cheryl Vermillion.
I have a raised ranch house. I had this deck, and I didn't feel very safe and secure out there on the deck. The design that Mega came up with was just so unique and so beautiful that I just had to go with it. And I have a dog, and everybody was real friendly with the dog whenever I had to let him out. It really looked like the guys cared about what they were doing. They took the time to sand things properly and to make sure things lined up properly. And it just really showed in the finished project. I wanted to do it right, because when you're doing a major project like that, it really affects the resale value of your house.
One mega call does it all.
847-658-8989. 847-658-8989.
Mega. Megapros.com.
One mega call does it all.
Let's talk about my car. When you're the best-selling brand in Chicagoland 5 years in a row, you got to look good, and you're selling a bunch of cars, obviously. But what is it about you that says you're talking to talk and walking to walk? You know what it is? It's the Chevy Impala. It's the 2016 Chevy Impala. Now, I'm cruising around in the 2015, the ice blue. You guys know the ice blue?
Blue Thunder.
Blue Thunder.
Kind of an understated Blue Thunder. All sorts of cool tools, bells and whistles, technological masterpiece. Sometimes I wonder if I'm smart enough to drive it. With the features that have earned Impala a 5-star safety rating as well. Car practically drives itself. Now, you get 20% of MSRP on a Chevy Impala LTZ. That's going to save you about $8,000. And Chevy Impala was voted the number one large car for 2016. This ain't your daddy's Impala, kids. This is the new Chevy Impala. You know what it is? It's a living room with wheels.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty great is what I'm telling you.
No flat screen TV, though.
No, but a nice big flat-screen infotainment center right there.
Ooh, that's nice. You know?
Let you know when you're listening to the Steve Cochran Show, which, by the way, on your Impala will be the only station you'll get. It says a lot about why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland. Check out the Impala. Not kidding around. I've been driving it for a year. Love it. And, again, you could do that at ChevyDriveChicago.com to find the dealer near you.
And summer in Chicago is finally here. If you've been thinking, this is it, I'm going to do it, I'm going to eat healthy,
Going to lose a little bit of weight before I put on that bathing suit. Give Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating a try. They work to fit within your busy schedule. Best part, you can choose from a full week of meals, a half week of meals. They work around you. The food is delicious, and I've lost weight. The meals are so convenient because, again, they do all the work. I absolutely love it. Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating features more than 100 unique, delicious meals, so you'll never get bored. Go to SeattleSutton.com right now and check out the Success Stories tab. You can read all kinds of stories about people who've lost tons of weight, 50, 75, even more than 100 pounds on Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating. You know why it works? Because it's not a diet fad. You'll lose weight safely and effectively and keep that weight off. Do it today. Log on to SeattleSutton.com or call 800-442-DIET. That's 800-442-DIET.
956, texters chiming in. Blame the NRA, lobbyists, the elected officials who are so afraid for re-election, they won't ever even consider changes. Was there security video in the club? Was he in the club previously to scout it out? They're looking into that. We'll certainly find out. Has there been a statement from the NRA? I don't even know.
I haven't seen a statement from the NRA yet.
What is the city doing about security at Union Station? There's an ongoing security push wherever crowds gather. But again, this is what we'd like to be able to ask the mayor and the police superintendent. And then several of these type texts from various area codes. Oh, my God, when the hell are you going to get it? It's not the guns. It's the person. It's not the weapon. It's the people. Let me explain something to you. Listen. Listen to what I'm saying. If an AR-15 is used in every mass killing, then it is the AR-15 held by the crazy person. So for that reason, shutting down the AR-15 would give people more time to run, more time to get out of the club. That's what I'm talking about, not your precious gun. Again, I'm supporting the Second Amendment, and I'm trying to urge Second Amendment supporters to do the same, because here's the deal. And, you know, you can come back and go, sorry, you were right later on. But if you continue to say, no changes, not a thing, don't you touch anything related to guns forever, you're eventually going to have a White House and a Congress working in conjunction that will make major changes to the Second Amendment. So how about you play along and help a little bit now? Because, by the way, if that's your stance on this, after 50 people died, what's your magic number? We got to wait for 75? We got to wait for 100? When do you do something other than say, don't touch my guns? What's your idea? And I'll be back tomorrow to accept your text. Bill and Andrea, starting in just a couple of minutes. Bill, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Steve. You?
I'm good.
All right. Yeah,
hope you had a nice weekend.
I did.
Yeah, play a lot of tennis?
All 3 days. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And are you in tournament mode now?
No.
Just no
recreational?
Tournaments?
No, just recreational.
Aren't we in tournament season?
I can't talk because I've got a match in 4 minutes, so I have to get out there.
See, that's Bill, not a match. That's Andrea.
Bill and I are going to play tennis. We're just going to do the show
right.
Playing tennis.
It'll
have
be
you
fine.
Guys ever talked about the fact that you played tennis, like competitively?
I did, but I didn't. I stopped playing. I didn't play in college.
Yeah.
I wanted to, but I didn't. I opted for my studies, Bill.
Oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, that's
well, that's admirable.
She played
you'd crush
all
me.
I know.
Oh, you would crush me.
Anytime you want to play, say
and
the
I
word.
Play I'm more of a doubles player, though.
That's all right. We can play doubles, singles, triples.
That'd be cool.
I did try to play triples. I wanted to play quadruples because, you know, my knees are bad and you can only cover a certain amount of the court.
Right.
I thought, let's just get a couple more squares in the back. Everybody gets a square.
It seems like it should work.